So welcome, everyone, to my first ever interview, and I couldn't be luckier but to be interviewing Kate Stillman, who is very well known in the yoga world and is the owner and founder of YogaHealer.com. And before I bring Kate on, let me give you a short introduction. Kate not only is a clinical Ayurvedic specialist and a yoga teacher herself, but she is most importantly an entrepreneur and the founder of Yoga Health Coaching and the Living Ayurveda course. Kate is a teacher, author, surfer, mama, wife, and she is also my own Ayurvedic teacher and business coach. You can check out her website at yogahealer.com to read more about her and everything she offers, because I only scratch the surface here. So welcome, Kate. So glad you're joining me today.
Yeah, me too, Annette. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. So my very first question is, why do you think studying Ayurveda and practicing yoga has been so separate and not combined? I know many yoga students today are learning more about Ayurveda, but still seem to have a long way to go in accepting the fact that if you practice yoga, you ideally should have a working knowledge of Ayurveda. Why the separation?
Well, I think the why comes from how yoga and when yoga came into the West, and just the nature of Westerners. Like, we're really quick fix, get results oriented type of people. We don't, you know, when yoga came in to the U.S. over the last 100 years, and particularly in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, before, like, it became more mainstream here, just in that beginning sort of importation of another culture, like, we got to go back to what was going on in those decades. And there was, you know, if we look at what was going on in the exercise world, like, aerobics was really hip in the 80s.
Right?
And it was in, like, running or jogging. It was actually called jogging then, not running as much. Like, that was hip too. And when something comes in, it comes into where culture is at right then. We're talking American culture, more Western culture at that point. And so, you know, just really the difference between where, you know, Indian culture and Ayurveda is at compared to where American culture and sort of exercise and diet and lifestyle were at, is it had to come into where we were at then. So the standard American diet was going strong, right? It was like before people were really, you know, unless you were really on the fringe, like, people weren't really detoxing, people weren't really juicing, people weren't doing a lot of dietary exploration. You know, American culture, as, you know, carried over from, like, the 1950s Leave It to Beaver family, was still pretty strong then. And so my sense is, as yoga came in, we're like, oh, look, it looks kind of like aerobics. So let's bring it into the gym, and let's bring it in through the, you know, those channels that were already somewhat, you know, set up and structured. And then how do we start to transition from the standard American diet more into a diet that's a lot closer to really the Native American diet in America, you know, where we're eating more native plants and we're awake to the, you know, the spices and the herbs that grow in our neighborhoods and, you know, stuff like that, the stuff that's really close to our indigenous culture. Like, that's just, we're just slowly in transition to really, in my experience, blending that with, you know, the true heritage of yoga, which is, you know, basically the native ecosystem, plant-based diet that Ayurveda has always, you know, has always espoused and is always the backdrop of a yoga practice.
No, right. And that actually builds on to my next question, which has to do with diet. And it's one of the beautiful things that you have said and that really resonated with me, is that all the cooked grains we see in the Ayurvedic diet today is actually very recent, and this is not how people ate in India thousands of years ago, and that the real Ayurvedic diet was more plant and raw-based, because that is how we connected with our plants and vegetables and how prana and consciousness was transferred to us. Can you expand on that or explain this concept to our listeners? I think so many people think that in order to be a good yogi, or if you want to embrace the Ayurvedic diet, you must eat kachari or a lot of cooked grains and dairy, and you say that's not so.
Well, when we look at, like, what Ayurveda is, I mean, just the word Ayur is life, and the word Veda is the study, and when we look at this, you know, like, what is a true Ayurvedic diet or a real Ayurvedic diet? It's like, it depends when and where you're intersecting the culture that's living among, you know, or applying the principles And so it's a moving target. If we start to understand that, like, the whole thing's an evolution, the whole process has always been an evolution. But if we look at the roots of Ayurveda, it's about understanding what is this life. And as soon as we start to get really curious about what life is, and we start to look back in the history of, you know, the history of humans, the history of plants, the history even of the planet, the history even of the cosmos, we start to get, like, blown out in perspective. We start to really become much more aware of nature and the elements. When we see how Ayurveda has, you know, been conceived of, you know, if we look in the scriptures, if we look in how it's then been applied over millennia, what we see is that its essence is a connection to consciousness merging with the cosmos and the planet. And if we go back before all modern conveniences into the beginning of, like, really of agriculture, what we see is that, like, humans had an enormous amount of plant-based knowledge. And the easiest thing to do is, like, pick a piece of a plant and put it in your mouth, not to cook it and not to, you know, harvest it and store it and sprout it and, you know, dehydrate it. I mean, like, you know, to do all these amazing culinary processes to it. So when we look back at Ayurveda's understanding of how to feed and optimize human physiology based on how conscious do you want to be, like, how connected to your ecosystem do you want to be, what we see is that just simply by eating a plant, whether that's a dandelion green or a dandelion root or a berry or a, you know, just some part of a plant, is that instantly you get to know the consciousness of that plant, the message of that plant, and you can feel what that plant can do for your physiology. For many of us, what I've discovered at this point in human evolution is that many of us, most of us, most of my clients who are, like, you and teachers, right, like, pretty evolved people, have no palate for wild plants. So the plants that we're used to eating are so heavily cultivated over, you know, and really homogenized, like, the seed base is more homogenized every year on the planet. The foods in our grocery store are in many ways, while it looks like there's a diversity in the, you know, the cereal aisle, like, at the base of it, they're grown from those, you know, the grains in those plants, the GMO grains in most of those boxes are part of one of three species. So we're not, like, there's not this massive species diversification in our grocery stores, even though it seems like there's a lot of diversity. There's not. Michael Pollan's done a ton of wonderful work on this. So as we've lost connection to basically sourcing Ayurveda straight from the plants that grow in our neighborhood, even the wild weeds and the invasive weeds that grow in our neighborhoods, if we lose the intelligence of connecting to the plants, we start to think of Ayurveda much more in our head, and we start to look at our diet much more from this heady, cognitive, analytical place than just from, like, how does that make my body feel? How does that plant resonate in my physiology? At the essence, that's what Ayurveda is all about in terms of the diet.
Makes very good sense. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. So my next question is, how important is Dinacharya for our yoga practice, our health, and the aging process?
You tell him.
Well, I know from my experience taking your course and doing the Body Thrive, it's made all the difference in the world, not to mention that I lost about now 17 pounds. My yoga practice, and my teacher can is a testament to that. My yoga practice has skyrocketed. Yes, totally, totally. But you're the teacher here. You explain to
why? The why it works? Like, why it works for everyone, no matter whether you need to gain weight or lose weight or...
Yeah,
right? Or get off the couch or sit on the couch. Right.
You're going with the cycle of nature. You're going with the rhythm of nature. So you're getting, so it's all being in rhythm and in tune with nature, and it just, everything then syncs up, everything.
It's don't you just feel like you, when you, you know, now that you're more in sync and in tune and grounded in your body and just feeling a lot more, you know, deeply aligned and deeply supported by the universal rhythms, the cosmic rhythms, Doesn't it feel like if you had to go back to the way you were living? I mean, and you've been a yoga teacher for a long time and a nurse, and I mean, you know a lot. But if you had to go back to where you were before the daily rhythms were really part of your day to day, just what you do.
It's become now so part of me that when I do my 12-hour shifts and I do come home late, I feel it immediately. I am so out of my whole body is just aching, and it tells me immediately. It tells me you're wrong. You're off cycle. You're off rhythm. So it's really quick. My body's really quick to respond. Whereas in the past, I think it just kind of, I was kind of dead to it. So it wasn't, I just kept doing the wrong things, but I wasn't, nothing was awake to tell me, and I just kept going down the wrong path. So
yeah, no, and it's a really interesting thing that happens. It's like as we hone in, that which gives life and gives energy and gives us the experience of thrive, we become really aware of when we're just even a little bit like left of center, like that was not quite a good choice. I'll give an example. This is so funny. I have a friend visiting from out of town, and we went over, I live in Mexico half time, and we went over to San Pancho, this really cute little artisan hood a little ways away. And on the way back, we're like, let's get ice cream. And it's like 80 degrees here. So that part was okay. But it was a little late at night, and I got cappuccino ice cream. And I was up until 1 in the morning because I had way too much caffeine in my system. And it's like, really, Kate? You made that decision? And so I think, you know, a lot of what I like to tell people is that, you know, it's not about never doing something again. It's more just listening and attuning and respecting our body. And when we do make a bad choice, like, what can we do? So then I took some spicy oils to help me digest that, like essential oils to help me like really just turn up digestion. And I slept in a little later, and I got right back in sync today. Did a hard workout this morning to clear stuff from my body. And, you know, just having those mediating factors, because what we do most of the time is in rhythm. What we do most of the time awakens us to the life we want to be living and in the body we want to be living in. Then it's like when we go off a little, you work a 12-hour shift, I make a bad decision with cappuccino chip ice cream. We know immediately, and we rectify immediately. And that's what keeps us really on this evolving road to just a better life.
Totally. And I know that my mood is stable. I'm always stable. There's not these highs and lows. It's like I'm stable. I'm joyful. It's stable. I can deal with anything that comes my way in a more stable way.
You know, and that's what I was going to say when you were talking about that. Like, I don't, you know, and you said, I can't remember exactly how you said it, but like not quite noticing before. And I was going to ask you, but like if you looked into your emotional body, chances are there were a lot of signs in there. There's a lot, whether it's disconnect, whether it's a feeling of a lack of integrity, you know, or whether it's just like moods that go up and down and in and out and high and low. Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that part up, because I think a lot of people don't know how to read the signs that they're just not, they're not listening. And I just want to mention too that, you know, we're talking about these daily rhythms, like, and we all know what, you know, we all know that we should be eating lighter at night, not eating ice cream before bed, you know, going to bed early, waking up early, but the doing it, right? Like the peer support of actually up-leveling and stabilizing at a new level. Like that to me is what all of the sort of cutting edge work is right now that we're doing in yoga health coaching, that you're doing with your groups.
Exactly. Because it's that energy, and it's also it's accountability. And that's how I was with the group. I felt like everybody else was doing it. I need to be on board. I can't be the odd one out not doing it. And so it just, that's right. So, okay, moving on. All right. So what advice can you give women who are about to hit menopause or have entered menopause and are just now trying to figure out ways to go through this transition gracefully and with ease? Or maybe a couple of practical things they can start implementing today. And men also go through andropause, and their hormones are shifting. So how can both men and women approach this new phase in their lives?
Yeah, it's interesting. My sense is that, you know, transitions, particularly big physiological transitions like menopause, are it's basically reckoning day. You know, and on Reckoning Day, it's kind of like when you check your, when you go into your like bank statement and you see how much you've been putting in and you see how much you've been taking out. And while we can ignore and suppress, symptoms, whether they're emotional symptoms or physical symptoms or even relational symptoms, for a long period of time, eventually Reckoning Day, it just catches up with us.
That is so true. And I'm just going to interrupt you just to say that's when I see most people coming into the hospital is in their 50s and 60s. That is the Reckoning Day. Now, late 40s to really early 50s, that's when everything starts breaking down. So the Dinacharya, we go back to that. So, yeah.
Yeah, so if you've been, I mean, if you look at it, each menstrual cycle is a Reckoning Day. You know, so if you're asymptomatic in your menstrual cycle, meaning that you, and it's not even asymptomatic. It's like, I love how Ayurveda talks a lot about side benefits. It's like, not only do you not have cramps during your period, but you get deeply intuitive and relaxed and fluid, right? Like, not only do you not have PMS before you get your period, but you start to just pull in towards home. Like, you start to get a lot more focused, but in a way that's internal instead of like external. You know, so there's these living in sync side benefits. You know, not only do you not have like major weight fluctuations during the month, but you feel in tune with your body as you go through the phases of of preparing for ovulation, of being fertile and ovulating, of, you know, releasing that fertility and going more inwards into menstruation, to really letting your body release. And it is a detoxification. I mean, we even know from Western medical studies of the immune cells that they pick up in menstrual fluid, that like the body is doing a cleanse. It's using the immune system to flush stuff out in the menstrual fluid. So if we look at being in sync through that cycle, instead of like, oh, I have cramps, I'm going to grab Formidol and wash it down with a Diet Coke, right? Like, then we're probably going to skate through menopause. But if we're experiencing a lot of mood swings or weight gain or weight loss or anxiety or brain fog or intense hot flashes, like if we're in all that and it's intense and it's disturbing and we're reaching for a quick fix, it's because we've always been reaching for a quick fix, right? And so it's like, if that's the case, get with a yoga health coach, like get in a group, like get the support you need to do what you should have been doing all along, and you'll have a much better aging process. And so you just use the menopause or the andropause as a wake-up call to say, wow, now I'm going to live a different way. Like, I'm going to make some choices to do things differently in the future than I have in my past, because I want to live a higher quality of life. And the only way I can do that is through up-leveling my day-to-day micro-choices.
Now that's really good. And that's where I was worried about myself going through menopause. And really, I have no symptoms except one little symptom, which was nothing. And I was, and I attribute it to the Dinacharya, to going through Body Thrive, the yoga health coaching. It has really changed my physiology, mentally, physically, everything has changed. It's just amazing. So,
party on guard.
Yes. No. I'm just skating on through this. It's wonderful. All right.
Well, just what a tribute, right, yeah, to others that come into contact with you. I mean, this is where, too, when we start to see, like, whatever we're doing, we're perpetuating. We're passing it on. So for people who aren't willing to do it for themselves, like, then do it for everyone else that comes into contact with you. Because now, Annette, everyone that comes into contact with you that's your age or around your age or people that are approaching your age, they're going to be like, wow, you're doing something different. I want some of that. And so then they get a hit of inspiration and connection. It's big.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. All right, my last question. How do you see the world of yoga and Ayurveda evolving in the coming years here in the West? Can you give us some of your predictions?
My sense is that, you know, things like yoga health coaching, which is just one of like a zillion different other really cool, innovative, very practical programs or ways of applying ancient wisdom into a very modern, you know, postmodern lifestyle. Like, we're just going to see more and more just super practical applications. We're also going to see, and one of the things that, like, one of my pet projects is the invasives, the invasive weeds that are worldwide that are deeply nutrifying. They're permaculture plants, meaning they help replenish disturbed soils over time. They bring the, you know, that they replenish the soil that's been disturbed and grows only only allows invasive weeds to grow, and they start to bring the nutrients from deep below the earth's crust back up onto the top. So my sense is, like, whenever we feel sort of, you know, pessimistic about the what's happening on the planet, or you know, what's happening in our grocery stores or whatnot, we can also see these undercurrents of super amazing things happen. We really get that nature's got its own solutions to some of the problems that humans have created. And we start to partner with nature on these solutions. And we partner with our own intuition. And we partner in our own communities with other people that are life positive and are action oriented. Then we start to co-create the future. And that is what we're going to just see more and more of. I am just so honored and thrilled to be alive at this point in time when we have unbelievable technologies to connect. We have unbelievable technologies coming from the world of, you know, integral theory and of, you know, co-meditation, where we're learning how to use our human technologies or just that everyone's born with, you know, much in a just much better way. And we're learning how to dive deep into, you know, awake life and much faster than people have been in the past. It's just so special. So I think as more and more people wake up and interconnect, we're going to see just massive, you know, massive positive change.
Now that's super exciting. Yes. Awesome. So, Kate, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with me and everyone who will be listening to this interview. Can you, how can people connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
Well, for people who are interested in Ayurveda, my favorite place to send people is to yogahealer.com/Ayurveda, AYURVEDA-training. And that's a 4-video training series. That's really fun. And, you know, there's just a ton of resources on Yoga Healer. If you go to yogahealer.com and click on the tip sheets, there's lots of great seasonal tip sheets to download. Right now we're going into spring, but whenever you're listening to this, go find the tip sheet of the season that you're in and print it out and put it on your fridge and just start getting, you know, more deeply synchronized with nature's rhythms, and you'll feel more energy and you'll feel more ease in yourself. And I just wish you the best on your path.
Thank you, Kate, and eat more dandelions. So thank you.
Yeah. Take care of your dandelions and they'll take care of you.
That's right. I stopped the recording. Thank you so much, Kate. I hope I didn't sound too stupid.
Honestly. Yeah, you're great. Great. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, this is good. We'll put it on the Yoga Health Coaching blog too. How's that sound?
Yes.
I think they'll love it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you. I'm so glad we finally were able to connect. So that was awesome.
Me too. It was a fun conversation.
Are you still in Mexico?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Yeah, you sound like it. It sounds so pretty. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm like, I don't know how much background noise I have. I went outside to do this on my porch. I'm looking on the...
We're going to have snow again here in D.C., so no, it sounded awesome.
Oh, wow.
Well, thank you. I know you're busy. I won't keep you, and we'll chat on Facebook and stuff, so okay. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thanks, okay. Kate.
Bye. Bye.